for they say and do not do. For they bind heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers.
Good morning. Let me take this opportunity to welcome you and to thank you for coming our way this morning. We hope that you will find your visit to be profitable. As is always announced repeatedly and with intent, we hope that if you have any questions, you will bring those questions to us. We'd be more than happy to discuss those matters with you of a biblical nature to help you on your journey to heaven. If you are visiting, you are honored guests, we hope that you'll come back. We'll be meeting tonight at 5. We'll be meeting Wednesdays at 7. Come and be with us at any or all of those services. I'm going to cut a lot of the preliminaries out because if you flip your family report over, you'll see that I have 10 points to cover. Don't pass out. Don't pass out. Hopefully we won't be here all day or even half a day, so I'm going to cut a lot of the preliminaries out. Although I have to say this, I cannot resist. Brother Jan said something about the computer and scheduling for 5 Sundays, and the only thing I can say that is, Jan, the computer knows what you need. Since it does, Jan gets stuck with the 5 Sunday months. Matthew chapter 23, in this chapter, we have a very stern rebuke from Jesus of the scribes and the Pharisees. And there's a lot of things said here, but probably one of the most glaring sins of the Pharisees was hypocrisy. And that's an interesting word in the Greek language. According to W.E. Vine, who is a Greek scholar, he knows a little bit more about this stuff than I do, but he says that the word hypocrite was actually just a common word like we would use the word actor today. When you say that Brad Pitt is an actor or something like that, we know immediately that that's talking about someone who plays a role. And that's the way they used it in Greek culture. It was used to describe an actor. And in ancient times, the actors, instead of wearing makeup like our actors today, they put makeup on or they'll put some kind of prosthetic device on to change the look of their face. And so they changed their look in that way, or sometimes even use computer graphics nowadays. But in ancient times, they would just have this mask that would be held up before the face. And in that mask was a little device that would augment the voice. It would change your voice. And so the actors were pretending to be someone else. Well, in the New Testament, Jesus uses that word. And by the way, he uses it almost exclusively compared to anybody. Nobody else hardly uses that word except Jesus. And I think that's because Jesus can actually see into the hearts of men and he knows the real thing from the genuine hypocrite. He can tell the difference for sure. But Jesus uses that word metaphorically to describe someone who's a pretender. That is, someone that pretends to be something they're not. And in a religious context, pretending to be righteous, pretending to be a Christian, pretending to be a follower of God, when in reality they are not. Now, it just occurs to me as I read through this passage that Jesus is really giving us the anatomy of a hypocrite. And by anatomy, if you look up Webster's dictionary for that word, it says one of the definitions is to separate or to divide into parts for detailed examination, to analyze. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to use this text. We're going to camp out right here in this passage. You can just leave your Bible open right here to Matthew 24. We're going to camp out and look at the first 33 verses. And we're going to look at the anatomy of a hypocrite as Jesus defines it. And first of all, I would suggest to you in verses 1 through 4, these were the verses that Drew read, is that hypocrites think that the rules apply to everyone but them. Read it again. Jesus spoke to the multitudes and said to his disciples, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do, but do not do according to their works, for they say and do not do. For they bind heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. Notice that Jesus begins with a compliment, by the way. Jesus compliments them for teaching the truth. When he says they sit in Moses' seat, that's not an insult, that's a compliment. And I know it's a compliment because he follows it up immediately with the word therefore. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do. The Pharisees were teaching the truth. They were the conservatives, if you please, of the religious world in that day. The Sadducees were the liberals and the modernists. They denied the supernatural, denied spirits and angels. But the Pharisees were the conservatives of their day. And Jesus compliments them for teaching the truth. The problem was they taught the truth, but they didn't do it. That was what Jesus was driving at. He says, they say and they do not do. And so they would teach the truth, but they would not do it. And in fact, they want you to abide by all the rules, but they studiously avoid them. That's the significance of verse 4. They bind heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on men's shoulders. You need to be doing this, and you need to be doing that, and you need to be about the business of doing God's work. But they themselves, he says, will not move them with one of their fingers. Oh, you see, the rules apply to everybody else but them. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Congress. That's the way, if you know what's going on in Washington, you know that they make rules for you and me, and we've got to abide by the rules, but somehow they always manage to exempt themselves from the same rules. And so it's kind of like that. And Jesus said, well, that's one of the things that hypocrites do. The rules apply to everybody else. You've got to do it, and you've got to do it, but not me. I'm different. I'm special. And so the rules don't apply to me. But another thing that I think is important about hypocrites is that they're all about looking good to others. Read with me verses 5 through 7. But all their works they do to be seen by men. You see, this is all, it's all about the show. That's what it's all about, the show. They make their phylacteries broad and enlarge the borders of their garments. They love the best places at feasts, the best seats in the synagogues, greetings in the marketplaces, and to be called by men, Rabbi, Rabbi. And so get the picture that Jesus is painting here. First of all, the phylacteries of verse 5. The phylactery was a part of the clothing. And what they would do was that they would sew pieces of scripture, little verses of scripture that would be hanging off of their clothing, off of their hats and off of their sleeves. And they would make theirs a little bit bigger than everybody else's, you see, because that looks real good. It puts on a fine show. Why, look how that man's dressed. He's got scriptures hanging off his garments. You say, well, everybody else does too. He say, oh, but theirs is bigger. And so it really looks good. It's all about the shows, the display, the looking. And he says they enlarge the borders of their garments. They're going to wear the holy clothing. They're going to make sure they stand out in the way that they dress. They like the best seats. They want to make sure that they're seen to be sitting in those good seats so that everybody can see who they are and where they're sitting in that special place. And they like the greetings, that is to say, the accolades. Rabbi was a Jewish word that indicated teacher. And so if somebody would acknowledge them as a teacher, that was an accolade, that was an act of praise that they were wanting. They wanted to be identified as teachers. And so if you get the picture here, it's not really about being right with God. In fact, Jesus already said in verse 4, they do not do these things. They say and they do not do them. They bind heavy burdens on others, but they're not going to lift a finger. So it's not about being right. It's not about doing right. It's all about the show. It's about looking good. It's about putting on the face, putting on the mask, putting on the makeup, putting on the show so that everybody thinks that they're holy and everybody thinks that they're righteous, but that's all that it is. It's just a facade, just an appearance of holiness. And that brings us to the next point. In verses 8 through 12, we see that hypocrites lack basic humility. Jesus is still talking about that ideal in verse 7 of being called rabbi. And Jesus makes a very important point. He said, but you, meaning if you're a disciple of mine, do not be called rabbi, for one is your teacher, the Christ, and you are all brethren. Incidentally, that verse indicates the definition for the word rabbi. You see, the word rabbi means teacher. He says, don't you wear that title, for you only have one teacher. In truth, the one teacher you have is Jesus Christ. And get this, you are all brethren. I think that's so critical. In God's kingdom, there are no chief seats. There is no big me and little you. Whether you're preacher, whether you're elder, whether you're deacon, whether you're another member who does not serve in any of those roles, we are all brethren, Jesus says. And so there's only one step in the chain of authority. You have us, brethren, and then you have Jesus. There is no other pyramidal structure. There is no chain of authority, you see. And so one is your teacher, the Christ, and you are all brethren. Do not call anyone on earth your father, for one is your father, he who is in heaven. He's not speaking here of our earthly fathers, but he's speaking of religious leaders. Our Catholic friends need to read this verse, and perhaps some others as well, who like to sling around high-sounding titles for their preachers and for their religious leaders. And do not be called teachers, for one is your teacher, the Christ. Now, I would summarize those three verses by saying this right here. They wanted the prestige of the high-sounding titles. They wanted to be identified as rabbi or teacher or father or something like that. But listen, they would not listen to the rabbi, Jesus. You see, he's the teacher, and they're not going to listen to him. They want to be called teacher. They want to be called rabbi, but they're not going to listen to the rabbi. And they failed to realize, verses 11 and 12, that true greatness is found in humble service. Jesus said, "He who is greatest among you shall be your servant, and whoever exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted." I love how God turns human wisdom on its head so many times. The way we think things ought to be or ought to unfold is not the way God does them. He always does them in an opposite way on purpose, so that the glory goes to Him and not to human beings. And in God's kingdom, the way up is down. If you want to be exalted in the eyes of God, then you must lower yourself, you must humble yourself, you must not be too good to serve. After all, it was Jesus, our Master, who humbled Himself and came in the form of a man. Who was not born as a king, but was born as a carpenter's son. There was no place to lay him when he was born. He was laid in a manger, a feeding trough. That's where they laid the baby Jesus. He said as he grew older that the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. The foxes have holes, or the foxes have dens, and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. He didn't even have a home. You and I would have a fit if we didn't have a home to go to, but Jesus didn't even have a home, didn't own a place to live. And he just traveled about from place to place, and he had no full-time job or anything like that. And so Jesus set the example about humble service. He didn't have to do any of that, but he chose to. And he expects us to make the same choice, that is to say, to humble ourselves. If we want to be exalted in the eyes of God, and that's really the only opinion that matters, your opinion of me does not matter nearly as much as God's opinion of me. And if we want to have God to have a high opinion of us, then we must humble ourselves. But they didn't realize that, you see. The hypocrite thinks that the way up is to climb up, but he doesn't realize that he needs to humble himself before God. Hypocrites are also a hindrance to evangelism. How many times have you heard that expression? Well, I would go over there to such and such a church, but I just can't stand the fact that all them hypocrites are over there. Now, I'll grant you that sometimes that criticism is unjustified, or sometimes that criticism really is not much, there's not much to it. But sometimes there may be some truth to the criticism. Here's where we need to put the mirror up and take a long look at ourselves. Look at verse 13. "But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men. For neither go in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in." And the reason that they don't allow others to enter, it's not that they're standing there saying, "Oh, you can't be baptized," or "You can't serve Jesus." What they're doing is repelling people by their hypocrisy. People are repelled and repulsed by a hypocrite. Children are even repelled and repulsed by a hypocrite. When they see hypocrisy in their parents, they're one of the first ones to throw that in your face when you get on them about something. They'll say, "Well, Dad, you do this, that, or the other. Dad, you use foul language. Dad, you smoke cigarettes. Dad, you drink beer. Why are you on me for smoking and cussing and drinking when you do the same thing?" And so children are repulsed by hypocrites, and adults, right-thinking adults, are repulsed by the pretender, repulsed by the hypocrite. And it is in that way that they shut up the kingdom of heaven against men. They keep others from humbling themselves and obeying the Lord. And furthermore, their own pretending will keep themselves out. Jesus said, "You're not entering yourself." And their own pretending keeps themselves out because, listen to me carefully, God will not have the hypocrite. He will not have you. You may put on a good show. You may talk a lot about the rules. You may try to look good to everybody else, but God will not have you. That's what we've got to understand. That's why this is so important, because it involves our eternal soul. But I tell you something else. Hypocrites are bad to take advantage of the less fortunate. Look at verse 14. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense you make long prayers. Therefore you will receive the greater condemnation." This gets at a motivation. You might wonder, well, why do people want to live a hypocritical life? You know, I think it was Wednesday night we were studying, we were talking about, I think, the issue of homosexuality. And I said, you know, if you're not going to live by the Bible, why put on the show? Why the games? Just take your Bible and throw it in the trash and walk away and leave us alone. Wouldn't that be much better if you're just that honest that you could just throw your Bible in the trash? You're not going to live by it anyway. Throw it away and leave us alone and go live your life as a sinner. And so we wonder, why be the pretender? Why play the role of a hypocrite? And Jesus is telling us here it's because there's some kind of personal gain they get out of it. In this particular case, they're devouring widows' houses. You see, in the name of religious pretense, they make friends with the widows. Oh, we love you. Oh, we would like to help you. And we've heard stories of this even in modern times of these TV evangelists. And they'll have these widows who will send them their fortune. Send them what little dab they have left to live on. Sometimes, well, all I have saved up now is this $50,000, but I'll send it to you, preacher, so you can preach the gospel, and then she's got nothing. They devour widows' houses. You get, see it, the motivation. Why? I get some gain out of it. Perhaps in that case, in the case here Jesus speaks of, it's riches. I'm going to get some kind of riches if I play the hypocrite, and people think I'm religious, and people think I'm a servant of the Lord. Maybe they'll help me in some way. Maybe what they get out of it is power or status or influence. And I believe perhaps one of the strongest motivators is just acceptance. The hypocrite wants to be accepted. I believe that's why I said earlier about the homosexual community, why don't they just throw their Bible and walk away? Oh, they want to be accepted. They want to be accepted without change. They want to be accepted in their sins. They want to be accepted as they are. And so they put on the religious front. And a lot of people today, other areas of hypocrisy that manifest themselves, they do it, they take advantage of people, and they put on the show because they want to be accepted. And this is the gain they get. This is the reason they do it, because of the simple acceptance. So under the guise of religion, they put on the mask so that people will accept them in their sins. They won't have to change. They won't have to modify anything in their life. And so think of that. Jesus is saying here that they take advantage of people. This strikes at the motivation, the heart, the reason why they do the things that they do. But let's move on. I've got to move quickly because I have so many points here, but hypocrites are evangelistic. Now, isn't that an interesting dichotomy here? Here I say that they're a hindrance to evangelizing others, but now I say they're evangelistic. And they are. But they're not converting people to Jesus. They're converting people to themselves. Look at verse 15. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You travel land and sea to win one proselyte. That's just a word for a convert. One proselyte. And when he is won, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourself. In other words, you haven't persuaded them to follow me or follow God. You've persuaded them to follow yourselves. You've converted them to yourselves. Now, these people remind me of a fellow in the Old Testament named Absalom. Absalom was one of the sons of David, and he ended up taking the kingdom away from David. And we won't read this. It would take too long for us to read it, but I'll just make a few comments. In 2 Samuel 15, verses 1 through 6, Absalom tries to put himself between David and his people. And it says that he kind of stands there at the gate and he's trying to catch people. People would come to the king for judgment. King David, I've got a problem and I need you to solve this. So they would come to him and he would act as judge over their case. And Absalom would place himself between the king and the people. And he'd say, boy, I tell you, there's just nobody up there smart enough. Nobody up there in David's house who's smart enough to help you. Now, I'm kind of paraphrasing here. Nobody up there can really help you with your case. I wish I was the judge. Boy, I would help you. I would solve your problems. I would answer your case in such a way. And it talks about Absalom, how he would take them and he would hug them and he would kiss them. And then it says he stole the hearts of the men of Israel. You see, that's what a hypocrite does. They steal people's hearts. They hug you. And they kiss you. Oh, I love you. You're one of my favorite people here at church. I just love you. And boy, I tell you, I could run things better than those elders do. I could preach better sermons than that preacher does. I could do better service than those deacons do. And so they steal the hearts of people. Very evangelistic, you see. Very evangelistic. But they're not converting people to Jesus Christ. They're converting them to their own personal agenda. I have something I want to get done here, something that benefits me, not necessarily something that's in God's line of work, but something that benefits me in some way. And in effect, they become thieves because they're stealing loyalty from King Jesus. You see, that's where our loyalty belongs. Our loyalty belongs to Jesus. Jesus comes before anybody else. Jesus comes before my wife. Jesus comes before my son. Jesus comes before my mother. Jesus comes before my closest friends. Jesus is first. But with the hypocrite, it's, no, I want to be first. And so they put the mask on, they do the show, and they win your hearts, and they steal your hearts, and they hug you, and they kiss you, and they persuade you into thinking that they're on your side, when all they really want is your support when they get ready to spring their agenda. And that's what Absalom did. Once he won all the hearts of the children of Israel, once he'd won their loyalty, then he sprung the rebellion. And he took the kingdom away from his father. You see, his personal agenda played out there. And that's the way the hypocrite is. Absalom was a hypocrite. And we don't want to be like that. In verses 16 through 22, we see that hypocrites play fast and loose with the rules. Verse 16, "Woe to you blind guides, who says, 'Whoever swears by the temple, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he is obliged to perform it.' Fools and blind, which is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold? And whoever swears by the altar, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gift that's on it, he's obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift? Therefore, he who swears by the altar swears by it and by all things on it. He who swears by the temple swears by it and him who dwells in it. And he who swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and him who sits on it." Jesus says an oath is an oath is an oath. They wanted to play games. Remind me of the games that some children play. You know, that they'll say, "Well, that didn't count because I had my fingers crossed behind my back." That's what the Pharisees were doing. "Well, you made an oath. You promised you would do this." "Oh, that one didn't count because I only swore by the temple. I didn't swear by him who dwells in the temple. I only swore by the temple." You see, that one didn't count. I had my fingers crossed behind my back. So they're playing fast and loose with the rules. An oath is an oath. The rules are the rules. But the hypocrite says, "Unless I choose to make an exception." And then suddenly the rules don't apply to me. The rules apply to you, and the rules apply to your wife, and the rules apply to other brethren, and they apply to the elders, and they apply to the preacher, but the rules don't apply to me. And so they play games, they play fast and loose with the rules, and we've got to understand that we can't do that with God. God is the sovereign. God makes the rules. It is our job to follow the rules. This is what, by the way, as an aside here, our religious friends need to learn so desperately. They meet in their councils every 2 or 3 years. Different religious groups have different time periods for that. But the Baptists will have their convention and the Methodists will have theirs. And the Catholics, they'll get together and they'll have a conclave of some kind and they'll talk and they'll come out with new rules. And the rules are basically this. They vote on it. What are we going to believe this year? What are we going to believe this year? Now, that's just the way they do it. Now, you can, if you doubt me on that, just read the religion section of your paper. That's exactly the way they decide. Are we going to ordain homosexuals? Are we going to accept homosexuals into membership? Are we going to have women preachers? And let's see how many hands we've got. Well, the fact is, you can't play hard and fast with the rules like that, fast and loose with the rules. You can't change the rules. God makes the rules. We're not legislators. We're not rule makers. We're not rule changers. We're not rule ignorers. We have to live by the rules that God has set forth in His Word. But the hypocrite says, "No, everybody else does, but not me, because I can make an exception. I can cross my fingers behind my back, and that rule doesn't apply to me for some reason." They'll say something like this, "Well, you don't know all the facts." Well, enlighten us, please. If we don't know all the facts, tell us what all the facts are. You know, I get so sick of hearing that. I hear that all the time. "Well, you just don't know all the facts." Well, please. Enlighten me and tell me what the facts are. Tell me what I'm missing from the book. You see, that's what matters. Not your situation, but tell me what I'm missing from the book. But no, the hypocrite's not going to do that. The hypocrites nitpick while ignoring their most glaring faults. Look at verses 23 and 24. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint, anise, and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone." Now, don't miss his point here. He's not saying that the little things aren't important. He's saying you need to do both big and little. "Blind guides," verse 24, "who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel." First of all, in verse 23, we see here they are nitpicking about the spices. "Well, out in my garden I had some mint and some anise and some cumin, and I want to make sure God gets his 10% of that. You know, I'm going to make sure, I'm going to weigh out every little ounce, every little gram of the mint and the anise and the cumin. I'll make sure God gets his 10% of that. But never mind about my heart. Never mind about my character. Justice, mercy, faith. And I believe the word faith there is being used in the sense of faithfulness. Faithfulness. Those are personal character traits. Never mind about that. Never mind about the real me. Never mind about my heart. Never mind about changing myself from the inside out. Just long as I tithe the little spices. Just long as I do the little nitpicky things. The big things don't really matter. And then in verse 24, he says, blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. I can almost picture this happening. Say you're a Jew, lived in the first century. I'm kind of playing with this a little bit to kind of put it in a modern context. And you live in the first century and you go out to eat at Applebee's. At Applebee's in Jerusalem. And you order a bowl of soup. And the Pharisaical hypocrite says, wait! You can't eat that. There's a little gnat in there. Let me get that out for you. And then he goes over to his table and he sits down and he eats the camel. That is also an unclean animal that he has no right to eat. And so the idea is this. They're going to pick at the little bitty faults of other people. They're going to pick at all the little bitty faults of other people while their own personal life is an absolute disaster. How many times have you seen that? Their own personal life is an absolute disaster, turned upside down. But that doesn't matter because you've got this little fault and you've got this little fault and you've got another little fault. Years ago, I never met the man, but I heard a lot about him. When I preached in Kentucky, there was an old preacher that was dead before I ever got there. His name was Ross O. Spears. I don't know if any of you ever knew him or not. He was highly thought of by the brethren. That everybody spoke highly of him. In fact, he's about the only preacher that I've ever heard that never had a single bad thing that I know of said about him. He was very highly regarded. Charles, you might know him. Ross O. Spears, very highly regarded. Randall McPherson, another friend of mine, told me this, that Rosso said this one time, and I liked it. I stole it. He says, watch out for those radicals. They'll steal your wives. Now you think about that. These people who are nitpicky, mark it down. See if I'm not telling you the truth. See if you've not seen it. They'll nitpick about this and they'll nitpick about that. Things that don't amount to a hill of beans. Well, I don't like that little blue thing across that table. Or I don't like the fact that these are uneven here. Or I don't like the color. And they'll nitpick about little things. And next thing you know, they've committed some horrible sin. But somehow or another, that's okay. We're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about that terrible sin you committed because, after all, we got to fix this blue thing here. We don't like that. Now, that's the way the hypocrite does. They nitpick. And I think it's done. I'm no psychologist. I'm no expert on this. But I think it's done because it takes the heat off of them and puts the focus on somebody else. Don't look at what I did. Look at that little problem and that little problem and that little thing over there and that little problem over there. And that kind of gets everybody looking over there. And then meanwhile, nobody's looking at what they do. And that is just a sign of a real hypocrite. In verses 25 through 28, we see that hypocrites are corrupt of heart beneath the surface. This kind of ties into something we said earlier in verses 5 through 7. They're about looking good to others, and this kind of picks up on that theme again. In verse 25, he says, woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites, for you cleanse the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside they're full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first cleanse the inside of the cup and the dish, that the outside of them may be clean also. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly. Go to the cemetery, isn't that a pretty tombstone? And we've painted it, we've whitewashed it, but you just go down beneath the surface. Inside, he says, it's full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness, the rotting corpses that are 6 feet under, you see. Even so, outwardly, you appear to be righteous men, but inside you're full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. I don't know about you, but I can't stand to drink out of a dirty cup. I imagine most people are like that. I imagine that's a fairly common characteristic. And if someone's going to wash my cup, let me wash that cup for you, Lanny, and I saw him just wash the outside, I'd say, no, thank you, I'm not thirsty. I'm just not thirsty. If I had to pick, I'd rather have the whole thing clean. But if I had to pick, I'd say, please wash out the inside, please. And around the rim there at the top, please do that. The outside might have a little thumbprint on it. I can live with that. Don't like it, but I can live with that. But please, by all means, wash out the inside. And that's what the Lord is getting at here. These people are corrupt of heart beneath the surface. They focus on the outside, and oh, does it look good. We've washed the outside of the cup. We've washed the outside of the dish. We've whitewashed the tombstones, and doesn't it look nice? Isn't the graveyard pretty? The grass is mowed and the tombstone is white, but you get down below the surface and the inside is corrupt, full of dead men's bones and uncleanness. They're all about the show. They're the ones who always go around saying, well, what will people think? Well, what will people think? You know, that's only minimally important. It has some importance. I wouldn't dismiss it completely. It has some importance, what people think. We want to set a good example. We want to make sure that we are not a hindrance by being a hypocrite or something like that. So there's something important about what will people think. But with a hypocrite, that's all there is to it. What will people think if I do this or if I do that? So it's all about the show. All the while, they fail to transform themselves from within. Real change, the kind of change God is looking for, comes from within a person. In Romans 12, let me just read this real quickly to you. Romans 12, verse 2. Paul's talking about that very thing, and he says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed. How are we going to do that? By the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. True change, the kind of change that God is looking for, the kind of change that will get you to heaven, comes from the inside out. We sometimes create the impression, and some of us may even actually have the concept, that as long as the outside is all right, as long as it looks good, it's acceptable. And it's kind of like you've heard me say before about checking the right boxes. Well, I told everybody I believed in Jesus Christ, and I told them I was going to repent of my sins. And I was baptized, and so they're checking the boxes, and it looks good on the outside because they say the right words and they do the right things, but they've not really changed anything on the inside. The real change comes when you renew your mind, when you change the way you think. I don't want to live this way anymore because the direction I'm going and the way I'm living is heading me toward the devil's hell. And so I'm changing my mind about that. And once you get that straight in your mind, you see, there's half your battles right there. Once you get that straight in your mind, your life will follow suit. And you'll do these things out of a true, sincere, devoted heart instead of just putting on a show. And it'll be washing the entire cup and the dish. It'll be washed from the inside out and not just looking good on the outside. You know, I think the saddest part of all of this is that hypocrites deceive other people. That's true, or at least they attempt to. But the sad part is they also deceive themselves. This is the saddest part. Read with me verses 29 to 33. Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and you adorn the monuments of the righteous. Now, he's talking here about people who actually serve God, the prophets and the righteous. These were people who were actually faithful. He says, you go out there and you build their tombs and you adorn their monuments and you say, if we had lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Therefore, you are witnesses against yourself that you are the sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up then the measure of your father's guilt. You serpents, you brood of vipers, how can you escape the condemnation of hell? Do you realize what Jesus just told these people? Let me say it real plain to you. Jesus just told these people that they are going to hell. People, they say, oh, you shouldn't say that. Jesus said it. Jesus said it. How can you escape the condemnation of hell? You're going there if you don't make some changes. But the best part of all this, or the part that makes my point, is verse 30. If we had lived in the days of our fathers, in other words, we would never do that. In other words, here's the person who's sitting here looking at my sermon and say, well, the rules only apply to everyone but them. They're all about looking good. They lack basic humility. They're a hindrance to evangelizing. They take advantage of the less fortunate. They convert people to themselves. They play fast and loose. They're nitpick while they ignore their own faults, their corrupt of hearts. And they say, well, I would never do that. That's what the hypocrite does. He pulls the wool over his own eyes and he convinces himself, I would never do any of those things. And this is the opportunity then for you to stop and examine yourself, isn't it? Now, I don't know. Only you know for sure in God. But I'm asking you to really look. Are you deceiving yourselves about this matter? Or do you see yourself as you really are? And if you see yourself as you really are and you see the faults and you see the inconsistencies, then why not make some changes? You see, this is not about, and I hope people understand this, and I think most people do, this is not about beating up on people. That's what people think preaching is all about, beating up on people. It's not really about beating up on people. It's about getting people to do better. That my greatest joy is to see people do better, to see people make a change, to see a sincere change in someone's life where they're going to be baptized, where they're going to be faithful, where they're going to serve the Lord. And so it isn't about beating up on people. It's about trying to get people to see a better way and to do better with their lives. Jesus does a magnificent job here of deconstructing the hypocrite. And the only thing I can say to you is, let's not be like that. Let's not be like the scribes and the Pharisees. And if we are, let's make some changes to our lives. If you're using a songbook, take it out. We're singing number 278. A very fitting song. God is calling the prodigal. The prodigal, the word prodigal means wasteful, riotous, excessive. And in fact, in the New King James Version, it talks about the prodigal son who wasted his possessions on prodigal living. Most translations will say riotous living. But the New King James actually translates it prodigal living. And so he wasted his life. He wasted his time. He wasted his money. He wasted his talents. He wasted his life. That's what sin does for you. It's a total waste. It's a waste of your time, your talents, your treasures. It's just a waste. And there's a better way. And that's the way of Jesus. And so if you're a prodigal today, come home. The Father's waiting for you. And He will embrace you. And the brethren here will embrace you. And we'll help you. And we can work together to go to heaven. If you're subject to the invitation, come now while we stand and sing.